Hello and welcome to episode 8. Today we will be discussing autoimmune diabetes such as type 1 diabetes and LADA. In today's scenario, we have a 40-year-old male with no known past medical history who was admitted to the hospital with DKA after a few week history of polyuria and polydipsia. His body mass index is 27. He was managed in the ICU with an insulin drip, and he has just been recently transitioned off the insulin drip and transferred from the ICU. What is the best next step? Check C-peptide now, start on basal bolus regimen, or check zinc transporter 8 antibody. And the right answer is start basal bolus regimen. That's because someone with DKA will likely need to be discharged on a MDI. C-peptide is likely to be low in the immediate period after DKA because of glucotoxicity, and so it cannot help differentiate between type 1 from type 2 that is DKA prone. It is best checked 6 to 12 weeks after discharge, along with two antibodies. In terms of antibodies, GAD65 should be one of the antibodies measured, as it is the most sensitive. Autoimmune diabetes develops as a result of autoimmune destruction of the pancreatic beta cells that causes absolute insulin deficiency. In type 1, this happens in a very aggressive form, usually at a very young age. In LADA, generally, it happens at an age above 30, antibody positivity, and no need for insulin treatment in the first 6 months of diagnosis, so a slower progressing form of type 1 diabetes. And that could be a common trick on the exam. Approximately 10 to 15% of patients with diabetes have autoimmune diabetes. And the antibodies implicated in the pathophysiology of this condition include the glutamic acid decarboxylase, or GAD65 antibodies, the tyrosine phosphatase islet antigen, or IA2 antibody, and IA2B antibody. And the third most prevalent is the zinc transporter 8 antibody. Now, don't be tricked by the insulin antibodies. Once patients with diabetes type 1 or type 2 are started on insulin, a good amount of them will have insulin antibodies, and it does not necessarily have anything to do with the pathophysiology of their condition. Autoimmune diabetes has strong genetic HLA associations, specifically the DQB1 and the HLA-DRB1 haplotypes can identify individuals at high risk for getting type 1 diabetes. So again, the HLA-DQB1 and the HLA-DRB1. So half of patients with autoimmune diabetes present with DKA, while the others present with symptoms such as polyuria and polydipsia. When you see patients with hyperglycemia, you should look for specific factors that would raise your suspicion for autoimmune diabetes. And these are the factors: age younger than 35, body mass index less than 25, so normal body mass index, unintentional weight loss leading up to the diagnosis, and ketosis and a blood sugar above 360 at presentation. So essentially, a young, lean individual with symptoms of insulin deficiency and a severe presentation should raise your red flag for autoimmune diabetes. But not all of these factors have to be present. Only if some of them are present, especially if someone has other autoimmune conditions, then you should strongly consider testing for autoimmune diabetes. So autoimmune diabetes is categorized into three stages clinically. Stage 1 is when you have the presence of two or more antibodies, but the blood sugar is normal and the patient is asymptomatic. Based on cohort studies, most of these seropositive patients are expected to develop the full spectrum of the condition, meaning stage 3, within 10 years. And the younger they are when they are seropositive, the faster that they will progress to clinical autoimmune diabetes. Now, stage two is having antibodies and starting to have abnormal blood sugar, but the abnormal blood glucose is going to be in the pre-diabetes range, such as a fasting plasma glucose between 100 and 125, or a two-hour oral glucose tolerance test between 140 and 199 milligram per deciliter. But the patient is still asymptomatic, just like stage one. And in stage three is having the antibodies, the blood glucose within the diabetes range, and having overt symptoms. So identifying the stage of autoimmune diabetes, you know, stage one, two, and three, is important because of the new treatment, Tzield, which is a recently approved medication that is indicated to delay the progression of autoimmune diabetes from stage two to stage three. So essentially detecting patients with early stages of diabetes and delaying the progression to clinical symptomatic stages of diabetes. Now, this treatment is a CD3-directed antibody directed against the T cells, which typically target the pancreatic beta cells. And it's a daily infusion course for 2 weeks, so it's 14 infusions. And in the study, it was shown to delay the onset of stage 3 diabetes by an average of 2 years. But it can come at an expense of some adverse events, such as cytopenias, rashes, and infusion reactions. And there is also a risk of increase in liver enzymes. Remember on the exam that they might bring you some unusual scenarios of patients with type 1 diabetes who have other symptoms going on. And for that, you should remember that type 1 diabetes can present with other autoimmune conditions, such as celiac disease or rheumatoid arthritis. It can also occur in a syndromic fashion, such as autoimmune polyglandular syndrome type 1, where there are mutations in the AIRE gene, where you have type 1 diabetes, mucocutaneous candidiasis, hypoparathyroidism, and Addison's disease. And in another syndrome called X-linked polyendocrinopathy, that one is caused by a mutation in the FOXP3, which is an X-linked genetic disorder, and it can present with type 1 diabetes, cytopenias, thyroid disease, and respiratory distress syndrome. This concludes our episode on autoimmune diabetes. In the next episode, we will be discussing cystic fibrosis-related diabetes and post-transplant diabetes. Thank you for listening and see you in the next episode.